Get ready.
How you a revolutionary, but you totally willing to leave weapons on the table that your enemy is fighting to keep you from using anyway?
For real talk.
Being a contrarian for contrary's sake is whack, but the assault on reality has been so thorough, even niggas we used to routinely ignore have somehow found an audience.
All the time.
I'm not above it all, and I won't pretend to be. America provides you all the freedom in the world to be a dummy. You just don't get to be loud and dumb around me.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Snow, but you may be new to this. I just called dibs. Let me tell you its history.
Chicago neighborhoods were mostly laid out between 1900 and 1920, and vehicles looked like this, and they were big and they were expensive, so most people still use horse and buggy. After World War II, that would change with the invention of expressways, and cars became a little more affordable, so families started to own two cars. Fast forward to January of 1967, where a record of 23 inches of snow fell on Chicago. Chicago being Chicago, we kind of took that first day off, but that second day, people still had to go to work, people still had to go to school. And that's when the Chicago dibs rules started. After digging out 23 inches of snow, we dared you to take our parking spot. Is dibs legal? Absolutely not. It's a time-honored tradition. If you park in a spot you didn't shovel, we will bury your car. The Chicago way.
Yo. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 325 of the report. And right now, I'm kicking it here with my brother, my friend from another. My brother from another mother, man. My homie Sherman, a.k.a. Dilla, a.k.a. Six Figure Dilla from TikTok. Say what's up to the people, fam.
Hey, good evening. Glad to be here. What's up, my brother Span? Definitely an honor. I'm listening, 300 something. Wow, you've been at it. Wow.
Hey, 10 years, man. 10 years we've been doing this.
That's what's up.
Listen. Before we get started, I do need to let you guys know how to get in touch with us here at the Span Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard, because the voice lines will be open. The voicemail line is going to be open. The chat room is going to be open. So let me let you guys know how you can get in touch with us over here at the Span Report Podcast. You can go ahead and hit up the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. We'll play them on the show and respond to you right here on the show as well. And if you're catching us live, you can chop it up with us here live at area code 313-288-0485. You can also email us here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Go ahead, leave us those emails, and of course those emails will get right here and reply to here live on the show as well. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So you go ahead, follow me there, chop it up with your man Span throughout the week. And also hit up our website at www.thespanreport.com. You can go there, you can watch replays of the show, you can vote in the polls when we decide to put those polls up, you can donate to the show as often as you like, as much as you like, and of course we really do appreciate every dime over here at the Span Report Podcast Network, man. Also, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. Those 5-star reviews are the ones that get read here live on the show. We appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing that. Doesn't cost you a dime, man. Just a couple minutes of your time to let everybody know why you're rocking with us over here at the Span Report Podcast Network. Now, we got that shit out the way.
Word.
And I'm here with my homie, man. I'm here with my homie, the historian, Six Figure Dilla, man. My man just got a write up in the Chicago Tribune, man. Internationally known historian now, man. Olive Harvey Middle College alum, yo, man. Like I'm just like excited to have you on the show here, man. Cause like we were just kind of talking a little bit about some of the things that we went through as like teenagers and shit, man. And like to see where we are now and to see what you're doing now, man. I'm like just like I don't know, man. My heart just like, man, that's my dog, man. It's like, that's my dog. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like it was only appropriate to bring you on, man, and talk about some of the things that you're going through, you know, some of the things that are happening for you, man, and some of the things that brought you to where you are today, man, real talk. And so my first question for you is, of course, because you are like getting, you know, internationally recognized as a historian, man. Like, what was the first thing? Like, what was the thing that, like, that history bug, when did it first hit you?
That's a pretty difficult question to answer, because, you know, hindsight sometimes plays tricks on you.
Yeah.
Sometimes you create memories, right? I think, though, maybe not a particular point, but it's just always been around me. And one day I looked up and I was able to appreciate it. My father was a Chicago police officer for 30 years. And during that time, he was a part of Mayor Harold Washington's bodyguard detail and also Eugene Sawyer's bodyguard detail. Okay. So sometimes somebody else would call off and he had to go over and sit at the house. And if he had his kids with him, we went with him, you know, so we would be sitting in Harold Washington's basement, you know, and Harold Washington being who he was, you know, had an appreciation for history. So in his basement, there's historical shit hanging on walls and stuff like that. And so I would ask questions. Hey, what's this? Hey, what's that? And if the man Harold himself didn't answer me, it'd be, you know, my father or somebody else. And that just continued. So it probably started out there.
Okay. Okay. I can remember, you know, when we were in high school, going through some of those Bronzeville tours, doing some of those, like when we were in theater together, like there would be, we would go to like plays and stuff, and we would get a chance to meet some of the historical figures that the plays were about. I can remember going to a play and we met like the wife of Fred Hampton, or going on the middle college, like the college tour, and meeting, you know, like I remember getting a chance to meet Coretta Scott King with the booger in my nose, you know what I'm saying?
And you know, Alice Walker, we've met on those tours.
Yeah, man. So, like, how much did, like, the middle college influence some of the historical, you know, love that you have right now?
Especially for Chicago, it did immensely. Like you said, the Bronzeville tours, eating that Soul Queen on Stony Island, and not just eating there because it was cheap food, but the teachers and the proprietor of the restaurant letting you know how you were sitting in a place that was very historical. Going down to Gladys's to eat on the trips during theater. So we had a strong African-American studies curriculum in every subject. Yep, you know, if it was math, it was going to be math the black way. So, the middle college for sure. Mr. Gladney for certain. Definitely. He Mr. Gladney introduced Before the Mayflower to me, and that book changed my world. So sure.
Before the Mayflower, man, I remember it was at Mr. Gladney, Mr. Ali, Miss Johnson, Miss Jones, Mr. Jones, man. Like, man, we had some great black teachers at the Olive Harvey Middle College, man. I'm a gush on the Olive Harvey Middle College tonight, man, because
it's why we here.
It's exactly why we here, man. So.
Just not to even cut you off, what's so cool about being appreciative about that is right now my daughter goes to Gwendolyn Brooks College Prep. It's like the number 7 school in Illinois right now, like number 70 in the country, which is pretty cool. She says at her school, they tease the thugs. You know, at her school, they like, why are you here, gangbanger, bro? It's Brooks. Like, if you was really a super thug, you wouldn't be here. And I said, you know what that reminds me of? Yeah. Like, that reminds me of my high school experience the second go around. Like, I told you, we were at a school that people went to after you got kicked out the first time.
Yeah.
So to be at your last chance, freaking gangbanging and doing stupid, like, we looked at them like, What are you doing, bro? Like, if you was hard, you wouldn't be in big division with us right now. Go on somewhere, bro.
And
you
know what I'm saying? And that was a tripped out part, right? Because, like, I can remember my experience with the middle college. I had absolutely no idea when I got to the middle college that's what it was, right? Because when I got to the middle college, I was moving back to Chicago from Detroit.
Oh, okay, right.
And my aunt didn't want me sitting at home, so she took me to she took me to Simeon, she took me to Calumet. She took me to Bogan. all of these schools told me that I would have had to sit at home and wait till second semester in order to go to school. And she was like, nah, we can't have him sitting at home. He got to go somewhere. He can't just be sitting here. He got to go somewhere. And old OHMC alumni, Antoine Jackson, told her about the middle college. And that's how I came to the middle college. I had no idea that this was just like the middle college was like, oh, this is where all the kids that got kicked out of school would to. You know, like, that's what this is. But like, honestly, if you went there, you wouldn't know it because they didn't treat you like that. You know what I'm saying? And I honestly feel like when we went to the middle college, man, and like as we learned going through like some other like functions, like there was middle college conferences and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And when we go on college tours, how we present ourselves, and you look up in a lot of the places that were regular high schools, they followed. You looked up and they were like modeling themselves after us and how they presented themselves, man. So like, anytime I talk about alternative education, if I'm talking about Olive Harvey Middle College, it ain't about it being like, you know, that's where they send the dropouts and all the other shit. Nah, right. Man, because it just wasn't like that. That wasn't my experience. It wasn't that at all. And you be doing yourself a disservice and underestimating the Olive Harvey Middle College scholar, man. That's just what it is.
You know, it's from the base middle college scholar, I'll argue a whole lot of people, that's for sure.
Indeed, man, indeed. Now, I remember like early on, man, with the TikToks, you were sharing a lot of your daughter's TikToks.
Right.
And then I remember when TikTok kind of first came out, I was like, man, I think I reached peak internet, nigga. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I even want to download TikTok on my phone, bro. Like, Twitter, I got Instagram, I got Facebook, I got some other, like, what was that, Snapchat? I don't even use the Snapchat, but I got the shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if about this TikTok shit, man. And I looked up, and my mans was dropping historical drops on TikTok. So, how did it come to be that you took to TikTok in order to drop, you know, some of these historical gems about Chicago?
So maybe in 2017, 2018, I used to post black facts about Chicago on Facebook. And, you know, like what we call like long posts, right? I don't understand why a 2-minute freaking read is something long, but that's where we are. That's where we are in the world.
Microwave attentions, man.
So I used to put black fact posts up there. People would like them. You know, I get a decent response. People would share them, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's just my passion, history, particularly black Chicago history. My daughter, like everybody else, they want to, you know, you want to be TikTok famous. She want a million followers. She want a sponsor. She want all these things because she sees what she assumes is somebody gets on TikTok and they make a viral video and then they're off to the races, right? So she thinks that's what's going to happen to her. And what I was trying to explain to her is that's not how it happens. Like that person you see, if you just take a 5 seconds back up, do some research on them, they were in some commercial that you never heard of. And then they were contesting on, you know, He Got Next or whatever, all these shows, right? You know, the stars lined up and preparation plus opportunity equals success. And that's why they got that million views at that time. But ain't nobody knew. So anyway, I was telling her, if you want to be different, there is not one 8-year-old girl speaking Chicago facts on TikTok right now. There isn't one.
Yeah.
So if you let me write you a script and we rehearse it, it's going to be some hard work. Some of these words you're going to have to fight through. People's names you're going to have to fight through. But if you let me write it like, oh, you'll have 10,000 followers in no time. You know, it'll stick. And she's like, nah, I don't want to do that. I want to do the dance thing. Right. So, I did one, you know, just to kind of like show her, you know.
Yeah.
And people liked it in the comments, you know, because like you said, to your point, I of course wasn't trying to be TikTok famous, but just to be a parent, you know, she's on the app. So when the new TikTok dance or trend or something happens, she wants to do it. So, you know, I dance with her. Why not? It's my kid. Right.
Yeah.
So that's what we were doing on TikTok early on. And you know, it'd be like 150 views or something like that. I did that first Black history about John Baptiste Point du Sable, about him being the first non-native permanent settler of Chicago.
Yeah.
I don't know, like 5,000 people watched it. You know, they left my comment, hey, man, you should do that again, blah, 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 blah. So I showed her, like, see what happened? You know, like, imagine if this was you saying it. She was like, nah, I don't want to do it. I'm still going to dance. All right.
Now, how old is she?
She's eight.
There you go. That's your whole fucking that's your whole explanation as to why she went like, man, daddy, I don't know. I don't know about that one, man. Like, now, this is something that I was kind of thinking about. And, like, I don't know, like, to some degree, I feel like, because if you're from Chicago, like, Chicago is just in you, and you wear that shit with pride, man. You wear it. Everybody, like, even if I ain't lived in Chicago in damn near 20 years, but everybody know your man Span from Chicago, right?
right.
That's what it is. And so, like, one of the things I'll be thinking about, though, is, like, how, like, we from Chicago when we carry that pride, but also, like, there's a bit of sensitivity there, too. Like, you want people to represent Chicago the right way. Yeah. And so, like, how much of that was, like contributing to one of the reasons why, like, how much of that contributed to why you're doing what you're doing right now?
Yeah, it's definitely a major reason why I continue to do what I do, because it is a little bit of work, as you are aware, you can't really like just go dry and not put up content because you don't feel like it. Like you gotta do some work. And what I'm trying to be and what I'm trying to be referred to as, you can't just say what you want to say. It has to be right. It has to be fact checked. Yeah. It can't be fake news, right? So even that requires some work. But to your point, I absolutely hate if you're not from Chicago and you get on TikTok, what they think Chicago is O'Block, 63rd, Little Dirk, and you know, salute to whatever they're doing. I'm not into expressing my opinion on how people eat or what they should be doing, that type of stuff, right? But that's not Chicago. And even what they are doing, they're able to do because of a process, right? A whole line of Black people did this, even to get to us to the point to where y'all are even able to gangbang on the South Side, right? So that's not Chicago, though. We're not Chirac. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God, man. Like, that's...
We're not that.
That's one of the things that, like, eats at me all the time. Like, if you introduce yourself, or if you tell anybody you from Chicago, and, like, they, oh, man, Chirac, you're like, no, nigga, Chicago. No. Chicago. You know, like, I don't know nothing about that Chirac shit you talking about.
Nothing. Bro. Nothing about it. It's a shame that's because what it does is it makes that the little kids that want to get out think that the only way they can get out or be recognized is to play up to that, you know. Yeah. Don't get me started. I strongly believe a lot of the stuff that goes on wouldn't be at the, of course, it's gonna always be some bullshit, right? But it wouldn't be at the level that it was without outside fans. You jump on YouTube for any Chicago rapper in the comments, it's a bunch of outside people who've never been to Chicago a day in their life telling somebody else that they are punk for not getting get back for this person, like, you know, or not dissing in their music, or you know what I'm saying? Like, those negative songs, a lot of diss, the outside people who don't live here play those songs the most on YouTube. Which makes you make those songs, right? Because you're getting paid by the views. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And I wasn't fucking with Spike Lee for a long time after he made that Chirac movie. It was like,
man. Bro.
I was hot about that shit. Like, man, this is some bullshit, bro. Like,
that's not Chirac.
that's straight up, man. So, yeah, man. And we got somebody, we got a chat, we got comments in the chat. Horatio said, I hate that name so much.
Man, bro, I'm with you, brother. I'm with you. We are not Chirac. I hate the Spike even used it, you know.
Yeah.
So, that's not who we are as a city.
Yeah, man. There's so much rich history in the city of Chicago, man. And that's why I appreciate the fact that you bring a light to so much of it, man. Not only just like the Black kids, but like the Streeterville joint. I just saw that one today. Like, who that neighborhood is named after is after a guy who stole the whole fucking damn land, bro.
Right? You know, and the guy that bought the land, Fairbanks is one of the shortest streets in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, it probably runs like 2-3 blocks at best, half a mile at best. And Streeterville is historically known. It's the most expensive real estate in Chicago, Streeterville.
Yeah,
it ain't after that guy who stole it.
Yeah, now what's your favorite right now? What's your favorite bit of Chicago history if you can pull?
Oh, bro, you shooting shotguns at me now, man. That's that's really really a tough one. I would say probably the favorite one that I've done, favorite like TikTok story that I've told so far, would be this guy named Lloyd Weller. He's the first black guy to pass the Illinois bar, first black lawyer. Okay. He moved to Chicago from Ohio, and from 18 and like 26, no, not even 18, right? Because they started working like 13 then.
Yeah.
So from like 13 to 21, he was the first black mail carrier, first black clerk, you know, got promoted to lieutenant in the Illinois militia. He ended up being the superintendent of schools down in Tuskegee toward the end of his life.
Oh, dig that.
But so I love his story. And then I love telling about Chicago, Wisconsin. That always blows everybody's mind.
Wait, Chicago what?
Chicago, Wisconsin.
That's the thing?
No, that's oh, so yeah, right. We were
That's a thing?
Yes, sir. If not for some last minute backdoor politicking from our guy, Mr. Daniel Cook, who Cook County is named after,
yeah.
Chicago would be in Wisconsin. Actually, the original border is 71st Street, bro.
Wow.
So me and you, I'm on 81st. You was on 87th Street.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have been from Chicago. We'd have been from Illinois, but we wouldn't have been from Chicago.
You know, it's weird, man, because there's a similar story about like Toledo, Ohio and Michigan. Mm-hmm. Where like Toledo, Ohio was originally supposed to be a part of the state of Michigan, but because of how like the states were incorporated into the Union, it became a part of Ohio some sort of way. Like they did, yeah. I think
they fought a war. It was a war over Toledo.
As a matter, I believe they did an episode of how the states got their shapes.
Yep.
It was a part of that. So yeah, man, it's crazy how things kind of happen the way that they do, and we just kind of take it for granted that that's just how things have always been, man. Real talk. But, yo, man, we're going to get into some stories here, man. We got some things that are happening in the world. I want to kick it with you about some of this stuff, man. So we're going to get into our blue blazers, y'all.
What in blue blazers is going on out here? This nigga just say blue blazers.
All right. Our first story here in blue blazers, man. Yo, we got, you know, the coronavirus has been taking over the motherfucking world. We've been dealing with this shit for, it's been about a year now, damn near a year since we first started, you know, really paying attention to what the coronavirus was and everything else. Now, China, where the coronavirus, like, you know, when we first heard about it coming out of Wuhan, they've rolled out a new coronavirus test for you. Thing is, the coronavirus test that they now have, they do a swab of your ass.
Well, that'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
Yeah, man. So we get this story here. This comes out of the Washington Post. All right.
Okay.
It says, months-long lockdowns, entire city populations herded through streets for mandatory testing. The people of China could be forgiven for thinking they had seen it all during the coronavirus pandemic. But now they face a new indignity, the addition of anal swabs. Yes, you read that right, to the testing regimen for those in quarantine. Chinese state media outlets introduced a new protocol in recent days, prompting widespread discussion and some outrage. Some Chinese doctors say the science is there. Recovering patients, they say, have to continue to test positive through samples from the lower digestive tract days after nasal and throat swabs came back negative. Yet for so many, it seems to step too far in government intrusions after a year and counting of a dignity-eroding pandemic. Everyone involved will be so embarrassed, one user in Guangdong province said Wednesday on Weibo, a Chinese social media platform. In a Weibo poll, 80% of the respondents said they could not accept the invasive method. Even Chinese doctors who support the new test said the method's inconvenience meant it made sense for use only in select groups, such as at quarantine centers. If we add anal swab testing, it can raise our rate of identifying infected patients. And infection Li Songjing, an infectious disease specialist at Beijing Yuan Hospital, said on state-run broadcast to CCTV on Sunday. But of course, considering that collective anal swabs is not as convenient as throat swabs at the moment, only key groups such as those in quarantine receive both. Now, we're at the age now, man, where we may have to consider, well, not even consider, like, yo, prostate cancer screenings are coming up for us, bruh. Like I'm 40 years old, man. Like, you know, I told my wife they was gonna have to put me out, like give me some anesthesia or something, wake me up, smack me up or whatever.
Oh, man. I've had what's crazy, man. So I'm you just told that anal story, which brings a bad story. I'm lactose intolerant, but I'm hard headed. Right.
Me too.
So, lactose intolerant, but I'm hard headed. So, I work a rotating shift at work, and I was on a night shift rotation. So, every night for like 2 months, I was starting my night with this Oreo cookie ice cream thing from this late night ice cream place that was up, right? That was my intro to work. Got to be there from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. and start this ice cream sandwich. Wake myself up, treat myself, right?
Yeah.
But I'm lactose intolerant. And so your body's going to tell you that no matter what. And so once you no longer have like the bubble guts and shit associated with eating ice cream, it started to back me up. I got constipated. So shit, I'm worried. I go to the doctor and they like, the only way we can find out what's wrong is we got to stick that camera up there, bro. Oh, man, I ain't gonna eat no ice cream no more. And he was like, we can sedate you. And I was like, yes, put me down. So I woke up, and, you know, I was fine. And he told me, you know, stop eating so much goddamn ice cream. Yeah. But
Yeah, man.
Hudson's in the chat. We got to do it.
And I know Hudson's in the chat room right now. He says, why the disease got to embarrass people on top of everything else? Listen, man, they say that the test is more accurate. Right. And we've seen, you know, numerous times where like folks will say, well, you know, I got tested and it tested negative. And then they go out and they go do some shit, come to find out they actually do have it.
Right.
You know, maybe it'll reduce the amount of like false negatives. You know what I'm saying? Like the amount of false negatives where folks are like just out here wilding. You're like, hey, man, if you go get the more accurate anal test, you know what I'm saying? You might be able to go ahead and make that trip to Atlanta, bro. You might be okay, man. If you do your social distancing, you quarantining, you know, let them, you know, let them like play with your ass a little bit. You'll be okay. You know what I'm saying?
You definitely be able to tell the ladies. I'm sure.
I'm sure, baby. Like you don't you don't understand, baby. Like
what I went through for that.
No, real talk, man. You know, like with like, you know, I got put on the list, man. I'm on the list to get vaccinated, man. Do you plan on getting vaccinated at all?
Yeah, I do. My wife is a scientist, has a master's degree in biology and secondary education.
Yeah,
she's kind of on the fence, so that's our funny thing. You know, she because of the course of study, of course, she knows about Tuskegee experiment and Henrietta Lacks or Leaks, right? Stuff like that. So she like, you know, I'm going to catch the second round of the vaccine rollouts. But I kind of, as a person who knows that they typically don't run the same play twice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So now the thing is probably to get us to not trust the vaccine. So they run out of vaccines and we be the ones dying of this stuff. So, yeah, I am going to go get a vaccine as soon as I'm able to.
Yeah, man. They just one of my supervisors called me the other day, was like, yo, do you want to get the vaccine? And I was like, hell yeah.
Let me jump the line, B.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah. So he told me that I was on the list for the 15th to get the vaccine. And it's interesting because, like, you know, both of us work in utilities.
Right.
And one of the things that, like, really made me consider doing it was the fact that I'm amongst people all the time. Like, I have to go in folks' homes every day. And so the idea of like, you know, me being able to be somewhat inoculated from, you know, possibly catching it by getting the vaccine is like, to me, it was like a no brainer. But I was actually not surprised by how skeptical a lot of my coworkers were, because I was like, it was a lot of my coworkers like, man, I ain't taking that shit, man. I don't know about that, man. And like, it was tripped out because at the same time we was talking about like what we was going to be drinking this weekend. I'm like, nigga, you have never thought about what was in your Crown Royal anytime you turn that motherfucking bottle up. But suddenly,
you want better than that. That's the only thing that we consume. They don't got to tell you what's in.
Yeah. You know,
ain't no label on your liquor.
Yeah, he was like, yo, man, like, I don't know, man. I'm if you come out all right, I might take it. Like, it might not even be available to you then. Think about this. Like, you know, like, they making it available to you now. As people jump in the line to get it, you might want to go ahead and take your opportunity while you can get it, man. Real talk.
Well, worst case scenario, they'll pay my wife because they grew a third arm in 10 years. At least we get some money out of it. You died from COVID right now, nobody get nothing.
Yeah. It's Tammy's in the chat room. She's like, I want the Moderna. That's the one that I want. That's the one that I want, the Moderna one. And then Hudson, and he's like, which one do you get, though? Johnson & Johnson got one for the FDA approval. Now, do you get to choose? That's the one thing I don't know, if whether or not I get to choose which one I get. But the thing is, I don't think Johnson & Johnson's is going to be available by the time it's time for me to go take the vaccine. So I don't I don't think Johnson & Johnson's going to be on the table for your boy when it's time for me to take it. But I know the Pfizer one and the Moderna one is going to be on the table. Pfizer is actually manufactured here in Michigan. So chances are I might end up getting that one. But
yeah. And you know, Pfizer, they make good product, you know.
Yeah, man. Real talk. So that's in Blue Blazes, man. Now another story that we got here in Blue Blazes is did you get involved in any of the stock trading shit with GameStop? You know,
AMC? All my homies did. I did not
say. Yeah, man. So check this out. One of the things I kind of talked a little bit about this last week. You know, they were trying to frame this as a little guy against the big guy sort of story, right?
Right, right.
I didn't really buy that shit, like, not in the least. Like, I felt like it was way too much being, like, the markets move way too big for it to be, like little guys from this Reddit group, right?
Right.
Come to find out, a Reddit trader who was behind the GameStop rally, his name is Keith Gill. This motherfucker said he lost $13 million in one day. Damn. Now, think about this for a second. $13 million. They've been promoting this as if this was like the little guy going up against the big guy and the big guy changing the rules on the little guy, this, that, and the other. This was always like the big boys against some niggas that's a little bit smaller than them. But it wasn't the little guys, man.
It was the pros against the overseas dudes.
Man. It was just like, some guys that got some bread to lose, you know what I'm saying? Because, most of the people that I know that are really, like, trying to get into the stock market are trying to play around with the Robinhood app and stuff like that. You might, every now and again, you might throw $100 in there. You might throw $50 in there. You might $25 just to see, you know what I'm saying? I don't know a whole lot of people that's got, like, I don't know, 5 G's to throw away on Robinhood. I just don't. Now, I know some people who do, like, know some people who do, but I don't know any who do. You know what I'm saying? Like, they got $5,000 to throw away on Robinhood. So, let me get this story here. We read this here. This comes out of the New York Post. It says a Reddit user who has sparked the explosive rally on GameStop's stock price said he lost more than $13 million in a single day as the shares crashed. Keith Gill, the Massachusetts man better known as Deep Fucking Value on Reddit and Roaring Kitty on YouTube, revealed the loss on Reddit's Wall Street Bets forum, where he's been sharing regular updates of his GameStop investment. Gill had 50,000 shares in the video game retailer along with 500 call options. The value of his stake dropped by $13.6 million on Tuesday as GameStop's share price tumbled 60%, adding to a roughly $5.2 million loss on Monday, according to screenshots of his brokerage account that he posted on Reddit. Even with those losses, Gill says he racked up a $7.6 million gain on his GameStop bet, which reportedly started with a $53,000 investment in June of 2019. He doesn't appear to have sold any shares or options since the stock sank this week. Gill has become an internet celebrity since his fellow Wall Street Bets users carried out one of the biggest short squeezes ever, driving GameStop shares share stock price as high as $483 last week, man. I saw people all of a sudden jumping on, like, yo, man, you got to get on it, like, the GameStop. I'm like, man, what? And I asked the question, man, because I'm like, man, when did suddenly I know a whole bunch of Jordan Belforts and fucking Warren Buffetts, man. Like, where did you niggas come from, B? And, like, this had the world fucking talking. Now, do you, like, kind of play around with the stocks on Robinhood?
None of that, man. I set it and forget it. I got a couple homies who I'm going to start to shadow follow or whatever to do my login, and they do what they do. But like you say, it's going to be $200, and I'll ask them about it in a year. You know, I have some friends that do it, but I don't.
Yeah, man. I did I'm on the Robinhood app. I was kind of playing around with it. And there was this one stock that I bought. I bought two shares, man. Because like I said, I ain't like out there like that. Right. I bought two shares. They was $10 a piece when I bought them. I'm like, all right, $25. Yeah, I'll buy some of this. It was Enphase Energy for any of y'all who's interested, right? Enphase Energy. It was $10 when I bought them shits. And now they're sharing at like 100 and like, at one point they got up to, I want to say like $137 a share. Huh, and I was, but I was mad that I ain't buy more shares. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm like, yo, I could have really cashed out on this shit if I'd have really, like, you know, invested. Is, but you know, scared money don't make money is what they say.
Right? I got a worse story than that. This years ago, 2000 and maybe 7 or 8, the auto bus, right? The GM auto bus.
Yeah.
So, you know, all these companies are in bed together or connected some kind of way or another. At the time, I was working for Verizon Wireless in the call center. They sent out a company email saying that through their company brokerage, buying employee share shit, I don't know the rules, but GM stock, $5 a share, but GM had just was going tank. And the motherfucker I was sitting next to was like, man, that GM shit ain't finna be worth. They finna go bankrupt. And I'm like, they're not gonna go bankrupt. And he's like, man, car companies go bankrupt all the time. So I let it pass. And then like a month or two later, they was too big to fail and they bailed them out. And now GM's the shit. And I could have got in at $5.
Could have got in, man. Like, that's the thing, man. It's a gamble. Just like anything else. Like if you betting on the Super Bowl, if you betting on who going to win the NBA Finals, is all a gamble. Trying to make an educated guess as to whether or not this company is going to do better, you know, on the long term, as to whether or not, you know, are you willing to just, like, you know, have your money sit there and wait to see if it's going to, like, grow into anything, right? Which is interesting now, though, like, because I see all these fucking, like, these sports betting, like, these sports books are all over the place, man. Like, they pretty much replaced the fucking, like, political ads, man. Like, I haven't seen a political ad since the election. But these sports books, nigga, like, yo, all of them, like, yo, come spend your money with us.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? One of my homies is like, yo, man, but he said it's like, a lot of these sites now, though, they're asking for your social security number. And I'm like, yeah. So they can tax your shit. Like, you ain't about to be out here winning this money and they ain't getting their part, man. Like, the government gonna get their piece whether you like it or not.
Because the people you win it from, they show got a report they lost it.
They so got a report they lost it.
Who, man, you lose it to?
Yeah, man. And I damn, Google, I'm not talking to you, man.
Man, I'm sure your audience know you have the most technologically enhanced house in the world. He a gadget freak. I'm surprised that the garage door ain't open, the window behind you ain't start sliding.
Well, I mean, not today. not today. But yeah, man, I really did like get in on like the smart home shit, man. I want to make shit easy, especially like for turning off lights, man. Like, you remember when we was young, man, and like, when your parents were like, hey, man, you ain't in that room, turn off that motherfucking light. And you was like, but I was in the basement, though. I didn't even know the light was on.
Right.
See, now I got it to where, like, I ain't even got to go to the basement. I could pull it up on my phone. Like, hey, man, turn off the basement lights. Which should be easy for everybody in the house, right? And you can just tell you can just tell the Google Joint, like, hey, turn the lights off in the bathroom. Like, and it do it. There should be no reason why all the lights is on in my house.
Man.
No reason, man. No reason. So yeah, man. That's in Blue Blazers, man. We got another story here, man. This is actually kind of crazy. So some dude went to Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles, right? I've never been to Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles. I heard great things, though.
You gotta go.
I heard great things. He went into the Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles. My man didn't have a mask on. Okay. They denied this motherfucker his chicken and waffles. My man's came back with the yapa. Like, came back with the chopper. And he decided to rob these motherfuckers of chicken and fucking waffles, bro.
Ho, brother. Ho, whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, you got too much dip on your chip.
Now, we get this story here. This comes from Go.com. It says, a man who was denied service for not wearing a mask at a fried chicken restaurant allegedly returned with a gun and held up the kitchen before robbing them of fried chicken and waffles.
Man, you know he's black.
Someone get this jigaboo away from me.
Just the incident occurred at approximately 5:37 p.m. at Roscoe's House of Chicken and Waffles in Pasadena, California, according to ABC News. KABC said that according to police and restaurant officials, the suspect initially walked into Roscoe's to order food, but was denied service by the staff because he was not wearing a mask. Employees informed him that he could return to get food once he was wearing one. So this nigga, instead of going to get a mask, went and got the yacht. God damn. The man then left the restaurant and did indeed return, but this time he showed up at the back of the establishment with a gun. He comes straight towards me with a gun, pointed it at me and said, put all the chicken in the bag.
How do you not laugh when that's happening?
Put all the chicken in the bag. Cook Robert Gonzalez, who was working in the kitchen when the suspect walked in, told KABC in an interview after the incident. Manager Angela Prieto said he didn't take or demand any cash from the restaurant, only chicken and waffles. He didn't take any cash. He actually took chicken, and before he walked out the door, he took syrup for his chicken. Nigga!
He wanted to come back, man.
Nigga!
Big Mama, your arm!
Oh, my God. He said, they were feeling scared, especially my cashier, Prieto said. She was very, very scared. And when I first talked to her, she was basically hysterical. But after a while, she calmed down and started laughing about it because she realized all he did take was some chicken.
That's it. Didn't hurt nobody. He didn't have a mask. He probably didn't have a mask. He had his gun.
It's an ironic twist. Surveillance cameras were able to capture images of the man's face due to the fact that he was not wearing a mask. According to the Los Angeles Times, the suspect is described as a black man in his 30s or 40s with a thin build, black curly hair, hazel eyes, and tattoos on his neck and face. Man, they gonna find this nigga quick, bro.
Oh, man.
He was last seen wearing a green sweater and white sweatpants with black polka dots. His companion was described as a Latino man with a shaved head standing between 5 feet four and 5 foot five and weighing about 150 pounds. They was hungry, bro.
All day they was like, when we get through doing what we doing, we gonna go to Roscoe's, we gonna get some chicken and waffles. And when they told him no, like, that is great,
bro. He could have just went to the gas station. They got, man, you can buy like masks at the gas station, man. They selling them for $1.
That is great.
For $1, man. That's like that's blue blazes for your ass, man. What the fuck is this nigga think about, man? For real,
man.
Like, oh man. Now wait, how many more? Okay, so we got a couple more. We got another story, and this is also involved chicken, man. So apparently, I hope everybody's sitting down. Popeye's chicken then decided that they was gonna take the Cajun rice and the green beans off the motherfucking menu.
God damn!
Yeah, man.
I saw that one.
Now, I ain't gonna even read no fucking story about this because I think this is a travesty. I think they should. I think whoever did this needs their ass whooped. I am a frequent customer of the Popeyes. So much so that I was annoyed at the hype around the Popeyes chicken sandwiches because they brought all the hype beats. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm at the Popeyes every day. Why I got to wait? Why y'all don't have a separate line for the niggas that just here for the sandwiches, man? I want my 5-piece like strip. You know, with the red beans and rice, and I get a Cajun rice on the side of that. You know what I'm saying? Two large joints, because I'm fat. You know, I'm a fat skinny nigga now. You know what I'm saying? But like, nah, man, they decided they were gonna take the Cajun rice and the green beans away from like they customers, like the regulars and shit. And like, I don't appreciate this shit, bro. First, they got away with like, so ain't nobody seen Annie for a while now, man. Ain't nobody seen Annie. Like, Annie been gone. Like, they came up with the damn chicken sandwich and they got too big for their britches, man. Like, the white people start paying attention to Popeye, suddenly Annie ain't nowhere to be found.
You know what? I ain't saying. My wife hates her that way.
Hey, you know, I mean, you know, I'm just saying, Annie, are you okay? You know what I'm saying? Annie, are you okay? Because we've been looking for you, baby. We've been out here looking for you. But, like, real talk, like, now they're getting rid of the Cajun rice and the green beans. Like, I don't appreciate this shit, bro. Y'all starting to sound like KFC, bro, with they bland ass sides. The only sides at KFC I like might be the mashed potatoes and gravy.
And that's box made.
But I mean, it's better than they motherfucking macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, my God.
That shit is terrible.
The only time I really eat KFC is if it was free.
Exactly.
I ain't seen no KFC line in quite a while.
Have you ever known anybody who preferred KFC over Popeyes?
Man, you know what? Only really, really country people. Like super duper country Mississippi was. Like, they greasy, but yeah, no.
Yeah, I know. It's a guy at my job, man. One of the guys on my crew. This motherfucker told me he prefers the KFC over the Popeyes. I'm like, how? But here's the thing. He likes that he likes that like the skin on the KFC. He said like, and that's the thing, the skin on the KFC, it don't even be crunchy, bro. Like,
yeah, it ain't done. It don't like they like, boiled it or something.
Yeah, it's like boiled fried chicken. How the fuck you eating boiled fried chicken, bro? Like, and then they gotta have the what's that? Like the crunchy shit. That's a totally separate type of chicken that they doing. Like they cooking it different. I don't get it. Popeyes
for sure.
Get on your shit. Stop. Like, hey, y'all, I get it. Y'all got a whole bunch of new white followers now that y'all came out with that chicken sandwich. That like they got up on the hype, but y'all straying away from the motherfuckers who kept y'all open.
Man,
listen here. Bring back at least the Cajun rice, bruh. At least the Cajun rice. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know some people that was getting the green beans and shit, but like, yo, the Cajun rice, nigga.
That was a hit. It definitely a hit.
Y'all out here fucking around, man. Y'all on some bullshit. Listen, is this your wife in the chat? Like, Annie was shucking and jiving that sweet tea.
Yo. I told you, she messed with that sweet tea, lady. Yo, when we first started dating, maybe 10 years ago, right? That's when that started to be a commercial. And that first one, man.
Man.
It boiled her blood. And that they came around right after Mary J. Blige had did her shucking and jiving for that commercial. So
listen, the theme to the Beer and Chicken podcast is actually a riff on like the Mary J. Blige KFC shit joint. So that is. Hey man, you gotta make lemonade with the lemons, man. You gotta make lemonade with the lemons. And like homie Hudson, like give me church. Hold on, Hudson. Listen. I love you, man. You my brother and I love you, but what the fuck, bro? Is everything okay at the crib?
I was just finna say I don't want to insult nobody.
Is everything okay at home? Because listen, I don't
that's
know
unemployment chicken.
My God, bro! Like churches?
Oh,
I can't remember the last time I actually wanted churches. I might have been like 10. You know what I'm saying? She's like, that was Burger King. You know what, Tammy? You're right. That was Burger King. They had a chicken sandwich at Burger King. Burger King used to actually have a decent chicken sandwich. Yep. I don't know what the fuck happened to they shit.
I don't know what they... It was almost like a marinara on it. I don't know what it is. Yeah. It was pretty good. I used to work there. We used to bang them.
I used to get them shits when I was at Tennessee State, man. Like, we had like a little Burger King joint in the calf. Yo, man, give me them chicken sandwiches, bro. I don't know what the fuck happened to them.
I used to work in that Burger King kitchen. I used to bang them boys.
That's what's up, man. But, yo.
Make one, eat one.
Hudson, man, if you're in the chat, like, blink twice, man. Let us know you okay.
Oh, my God.
This man said churches, bro.
He had 25 piece for $2.50.
That's still a roided ass chicken. But you know what, though? Hudson was always strong. So maybe that's why. You know, Hudson was always deceptively strong. Like, you.
Dude, man.
That nigga be in basketball practice with Hudson and you on the post. I'm like, wait, nigga, why are you so goddamn strong, bro? Like,
he wouldn't move. He would not move.
Yo, man, OHSC in the house in this motherfucker, man. Real talk. Now, another story that we got here in Blue Blazers, man, is Nick Cannon. Nick Cannon is actually, he's actually gotten his job back as host of Wild and Out, man. Yeah, man. I kind of went in on Nick Cannon when he had the Professor Griff shit going on, man. And Nick Cannon has kind of been wilding out for a while. And like it's more so like a thing of like white people, you could just tell white people haven't really been paying Nick Cannon that much attention until that podcast came out with him and Professor Griff. And one of the things that I can appreciate about Nick Cannon, I've said this a few months ago, was that, you know, he made an effort to try to write the wrong that he did, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that I can always appreciate is like when you come into more information, when you come into better information than you had before, then you'd be like, yo, man, you know what? I might have got that I got that shit wrong, man. I changed my mind on that shit, right?
Man, I love that. That's why I could not stay mad at Nick. I felt the exact same way you felt at the jump off, because what I find about people with any kind of new information is they can be a little annoying, right? A person who wasn't in church and then they get in church, they become a new Christian. Yeah. They get a little annoying, you know, people who knew in the frat or knew whatever, can get a little annoying. So it seemed to me that he was coming upon the knowledge that maybe you and I was grabbing in high school, right? The whole, you know, blacks are the true Jews or this or that, you know, just rhetoric that has been, you know, stated been for a very long time.
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
So it seemed like he was coming into that. But what's often absent in those type of conversation is perspective, right? You know what I'm saying? So the fact that he went and talked to some actual Jewish people, rabbis, just to kind of see, like, you know, bro, same way blacks ain't no monolith. The Jews are not a monolith controlling every goddamn thing. Same way the blacks ain't uniformly not shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why, like, I can appreciate what Nick has been doing now. You know, like he fucked up in a very public way, and that's one of the things. Like, you know, people fuck up in a very public way, and then, you know, you'll have a segment of the population who just like write that motherfucker off forever, and then you'll have. But the thing is, like, they fuck up in very private ways, so like it's not the same as like someone who has as large a platform as someone like Nick Cannon, who's made millions of dollars, not only just in the movies and shit, but also like, yo, man, this man was hosting fucking Wildin' Out and America's Got Talent. And like he kind of became like, you know, an American mascot, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so for Nick Cannon to be doing the podcast and having someone like Professor Griff on there, who was so extreme, nigga, that he got kicked out of fucking Public Enemy. Like, he got kicked out of Public Enemy. Now, like, Nick Cannon did the work. He apologized for the shit that he put out. He also went to go talk to people who were more learned on the situation than he was. Like, I couldn't stay upset at somebody who was trying to do the work to be better at what he was doing. Right. And so Nick Cannon has been, you know, apparently Viacom has decided, like, yo, man, he's done enough of the work that we're going to hire him back. And so we get this story here. This comes out of RollingOut.com. It says the 40-year-old presenter was fired from the show last July for making anti-Semitic remarks during an episode of his podcast, for which he subsequently apologized and held meetings with prominent members of the Jewish community in a bid to learn. MTV Entertainment Group spokesperson told Entertainment Tonight that Nick has not only apologized and taken responsibility for his comments, but he also worked to educate himself and others through engagement with Jewish leaders and on his platforms. Those efforts are of the utmost importance, and that's why we have invited him to rejoin our team. Production on new seasons of the show are expected to resume later this year, and reruns of past episodes have been added back to the programming schedule. Cannon previously insisted that he never meant to spread hate and propaganda against Jewish people. He said, "I know how you could have taken many of the things that I said as hate and propaganda, but that was never my heart and intentions. I was talking about how amazing black people were, but it hurt so many people that weren't a part of that community while I was trying to encourage and uplift my own community." The Masked Singer host extended his deepest and most sincere apologies following the backlash over his comments when he admitted to being ignorant and uneducated on the subject of anti-Semitism. Now, here's the other part about this too, man. Because at the time that this was going on, there was a lot of people who were talking about how Nick Cannon didn't have anything to apologize for. And, you know, why he only telling the truth. He only telling the truth, man. Why? And honestly, bro, like, and I say this, and I talk about racism on this show a lot. I talk about a lot of political activism. I talk about a lot of this shit, man. And one of the things that I always say is, like, just because it's coming out of the mouth of a black person don't mean we got to endorse all of this shit.
Man,
we are not. Man. We don't have to do that. And when somebody black is doing something fucked up, it's not a bad thing to call them out when they're doing something that's fucked up. And what Nick Cannon did at the time was fucked up.
Right.
Let's just call that shit what it is. And so when we're having these conversations about, you know, discrimination and privilege and things of that nature, like, we have to understand where we sit in certain conversations. We have to understand where we are in that shit, right? So, like, say, for instance, as a man, as a black man at that, many people will say, like, I don't really have that many privileges. But as a black man, a black woman can say, yeah, but there are certain things that you are able to do that I'm not.
Right.
And therein lies a privilege that, you know, to some degree, some brothers may not necessarily be aware of. And when we talk about, you know, like, say, for instance, like, racism that happens against black people, yeah, it's fucked up. But that doesn't also give us license to also be racist against another group of folks.
Right, right.
And so what Nick Cannon did was, he dabbled a little bit in some of that, you know, the anti-Semitism against another group of people, another group of marginalized people, because truthfully speaking, like, as much as y'all would like to believe that the Jews run the world, Like, yo, man, motherfuckers been persecuting them for a while. Yeah. 6 million of them got killed in the Holocaust, bro. Like, yo, so people have been coming at them for a minute. And so, like, for Nick Cannon to recognize, realize, and analyze the fact that he was, like, a part of some of the misinformation, disinformation, and marginalization of another group of people and try to do the work to rectify that. You can't do nothing but tip your hat to that, man. And he just...
I appreciate that. And just... why it was pertinent, or what he was trying to, or what people were trying to defend with his initial statement, I'm always like, what does that matter? You know what I'm saying? Like, right now, which I personally don't believe, but partially don't believe, right? Some of the stuff he said, there's some historical context to it that has some truth, but it's missing perspective. You know, it's not just in a vacuum, right? To say it correctly. But to that point, what is that going to do for the lives, the changes, the betterment of Black people today? If that's what you want to hang your hat on, that we are the true Jews, that statement being said and dismissing people who also claim Jewish as their religion and as their race, right? Dismissing them and saying that they're not the Jews, we're the Jews. Is tomorrow that going to transfer the wealth and power? We're going to be free after that? Like, we all stood on the mountain and agreed to that principle with you. We shit on their heritage, and we said that they're not real Jews. We all just agree to that. Is that statement is going to make us better? Like, you know, we spend so much time fighting over bullshit that ain't going to move the needle at all. That's not going to make us any less oppressed. That's not going to make our schools better. It's not going to do shit. So, you know, why?
The other part about it is this, though, bro, is like the oppression Olympics, right? Like, we don't get medals for having the worst fucking struggle, bro. We just don't. Now, we can advocate for our position in the world. We can advocate for, like, equality for us. But, you know, like, truthfully speaking, like, not just for us, but, like, yo, if we talking about equality, we talking about equality for everybody.
Yeah.
And so when you want to talk about equality, you can't therefore go ahead and then start, like, seeking to and promoting the rhetoric that marginalizes another group of folks, man.
Right.
And so, like I said, I can appreciate Nick for doing the work. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of folks wouldn't. A lot of folks would, like, just kind of get with the people who agree with them and just, like, yo, I wasn't wrong, man. Fuck them niggas, man. Mm-hmm. And now, not only that, Nick Cannon gets to come back to Wild and Out, and the people that he had provided jobs for
get their motherfucking jobs. They don't put on their shoulders, bro.
They get their motherfucking jobs back.
That and just his... being correctable has only increased his legend, right? Because they did offer that job to his homies. His homies turned it down. Yeah. But the celebration they all finna have when they get brought back together, he brings them back. His friends stay loyal. And he showed to them that you can apologize and make mistakes and come back and to help continue to feed your homies, like you say, like that. That whole thing finna be a great moment in time for us. And yeah, indeed, I hope it's appreciated.
Indeed. Shout out to Mrs. Thomas in the chat room. She's like, they missed that Wild Now money for the network.
My word up. That too.
Most definitely. Like, hey, man, we could use the bread too, man. You know,
That too. Indeed, right now, Black Lives ain't mattered like this in a long time.
Hey, man, get every motherfucking, get everything we can get at this moment. Because it ain't going to last forever. Like,
that's for sure.
It ain't going to last forever.
It's waning now.
So, yo, we got that in Blue Blaze. Now, the last story we got here in Blue Blaze is Kiki Wyatt, man. Now, when was the last time you heard anything about Kiki Wyatt?
One of them reality shows, 10 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. Kiki Wyatt ain't, like, I listened to a little bit of her. Like, the girl can fucking blow, man. Like, her,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like, talented as all hell, man. But the reason why we talking about Kiki Wyatt tonight is that Kiki Wyatt believes that biracial folks are treated worse than Black folks, man.
Well, that'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
Yeah, man. We get this story here. This comes out of RollingOut.com. It says that R&B singer Kiki Wyatt was vehement in saying that biracial people are also an oppressed demographic and, in fact, are treated worse than Black people in the United States. Wyatt was embroiled in a verbal fisticuffs with Love and Hip Hop star Milan Christopher in an online video forum, The Neighborhood Talk, in a discussion about racial animus. Wyatt berated Christopher for being allegedly too pro-Black and not taking into consideration those who are of offspring of miscegenation and are also tormented. Because you are so pro-Black and it's okay to be pro-Black power to the Black people, she said at high volume, Black people are not the only people that have been oppressed. They are not the only ones, my nigga. Jewish people have been oppressed, okay? Wyatt continued her soliloquy and interrupted others. And I can keep going. I'm biracial, damn it. We fucking oppressed because black people done made us feel like shit. White people done made us feel like shit. Wyatt claims that as the product of a biracial parentage, she was treated worse than black people, tearily testifying that blacks wouldn't play with her because she was not black enough. The singer added that she was not white enough to be accepted into their social groups at school either. I think you're a cool dude, but I think you need to understand, Sugar, there's more to life than just being black. Now, I got some thoughts on this here, bro, but I want to hear your thoughts on this first, man. What do you think about, like, the idea of, like, interracial folks feeling as though they're more oppressed maybe than, you know, black folks have been in this country?
I'm a historian. I think linear, right?
Yeah.
So if we're talking about black people struggle, right, you know, post-emancipation 1865 to now, right, I'm going to go ahead and say that mixed folks have had it better if we're going off of that 200-year history, right? We're going to say a little slice, right, as far as treatment. They were afforded more things and could progress faster, right? All of our first graduates of all of the HBCUs is all that is primarily folks who were kids of slave masters, right? You know, and that cannot be denied and not stated. So that is a form of oppression for folks who are of not mixed heritage, right? With that said, though, I think it's all about where you find yourself geologically, geographically. Like, that's not a fluid thing to say either way. You know, if you're a mixed kid growing up in Arvin Gresham and you know, you look really, really mixed, that's probably a true statement. You probably get harassed a lot more than the kids that don't look like that. Conversely, if you're, you know, the only super dark African-American out in Plainfield, and the mixed kids look like the white students too, they probably call you porch monkey and darky. You know what I'm saying? So it's like what you just said. It's this oppression Olympics thing that we're so caught up in, you know, super light skin mixed or, you know, very dark skin. If you were getting off the train in World War One with that uniform on south of the Mason-Dixon line, you was getting your ass lynched anyway.
Yeah.
It's how I feel.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what this really kind of like reminds me of. And because we got some age on this a little bit, like when I hear niggas still talking this shit, I just kind of roll my eyes a little bit. But this is what it reminds me of. It reminds me of the dudes who have issues with women because they wouldn't give them any play in high school. And they still carry around that shit. They haven't gotten over it. They haven't dealt with their feelings around why they treat women the way that they do or why they have the attitudes around women the way that they do, because they haven't dealt with the hurt that they got in high school when they weren't really
popping.
Right. They weren't the guy like that. Right.
Right.
And it reminds me a little bit about that. And the reason why I say that is because, like, with Kiki Wyatt, like, honestly, if she hadn't said anything, I'd have just thought she was a real light-skinned black woman.
Mm-hmm.
Had she not said anything about her being biracial or anything else, and part of this has to do with the fact that, like, it's largely been black people who have propped up her career.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? When we first were introduced to Kiki Wyatt, it was with Avant. And I forget the name of the song that she came out with. Was it Nothing in the World?
My First Love.
My First Love.
That joint was a bomb.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, the girl can blow. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't associate blowing with white girls at all, right? You know. so, like, we don't associate that with them. At least, like, in our communities, we just don't. We're like, man, that girl been in the church, man. Like, that sort of shit, right? I did not know that she was biracial at all until she said so.
Right.
And so, you know, what it sounds like to me is that Kiki Wyatt is dealing with some issues from when she was a kid that she's never really dealt with. Like, it is expressing itself now where, like, she feels as though, like, you know, black people have to now account for this hurt that she's dealing with. When most black people don't know all of this shit, right? Like, most people, when you come, like, people don't know you when they first meet you, like, man, I got all this shit that comes with me. And now you got to help me solve it. It's like, wait, hold up. Nigga, I just want to buy the album. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, I thought your album was banging. Like, I didn't know it came with all this other shit. And so like I said, it kind of reminds me a little bit of how, like, when with dudes, man, when we start talking about, like, dudes who, like, man, these bitches, man, like, they only want a nigga when he got money, man. Like, and you hear when niggas they don't have a little money, like, they only want a nigga that got money, man. These hoes, man, they're like, they only choose a nigga if he, like, he's selling drugs or some shit like that. Like, nah, bro, like, it's you. It's you.
Pure and simple.
It's you. You got to deal with the shit that's going on with you. And once you start figuring out what's going on with you, then maybe you can start stepping to a sister in the correct way. And maybe black people will start treating you in a certain way. Like, because again, black people have largely embraced Kiki Wyatt musically. Like, her career is like is largely because black people embraced her in that way. So, like, to hear her sitting up here talking about, you know, being, you know, biracial and, you know, black people not wanting to, you know, be nice to her and white people not accepting her. Like look at Barack Obama. You know what I'm saying? Barack Obama was also a biracial man. He was president of the United States. Black people love Barack Obama. You know what I'm saying? Like, shit. My great-grandmother was, like, mixed race. Like, could pass for white. She did pass for white. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons she moved up north to Detroit was because she was found out not to be white. You know what I'm saying? So think about this for a second. Like, when you start talking about the oppression that black people are giving out, it wasn't the black people who were oppressing my grandma, my great-grandmother. It was white folks who were like, nah, she trying to be like one of us, and she ain't. You know, like, just the historical aspect of it, man. And let's see, Hudson's in the chat. He says, when I was growing up, I got harassed for being light, but saw many who were harassed for being dark. People look for any difference to marginalize someone. I thought I was being marginalized, but when I look back, I marginalized myself more than anyone else ever did to me. Hey, man.
Yeah, it's internal.
Yeah, a lot of it is just like how you deal with it yourself, man. And then, like I said, you know, because we got a little age on this, to like to keep hearing, like, she's not that much younger than we are.
Like, probably older, for real.
Yeah, well,
probably a scotch older, a year or two older.
Yeah, she's not the, like, so, like, yeah, to hear that, like, it's like, all right, man, you tripping. Put out a good album. That's all you gotta
do. That's it.
Put out a good album, sister. That's all you gotta do. But yo, man, that's been Blue Blazes.
What in blue blazes is going on out here? This nigga just say Blue Blazes.
All right, we got one story here for Proud to Be an American, though. That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. That's enough of that shit. It's Proud to Be an American time here at the Spare and Poor Podcast. And our story here in the Proud to Be an American is, there was a insurrection on the fucking United States Capitol last month, man. And apparently, many of the motherfuckers who was at this damn insurrection, who were so adamant about the fact that Donald Trump lost the election because it was stolen from him, do y'all know these motherfuckers didn't even fucking vote?
God damn!
They didn't even fucking vote, bro. So we get this story here. Let me pull this up. We get this story here. This comes out of the HuffingtonPost.com. It says at least 8 of the people facing charges for last month's insurrection didn't actually participate in the presidential election. It turns out that some of the people who stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th in hopes of overturning the presidential election didn't even vote. CNN reviewed voting records of people arrested for their involvement in the insurrection and determined that at least 8 of those facing criminal charges didn't vote in the presidential election. Donovan Kroll, an Ohio member of the right-wing Oath Keepers militia group, was among them. Kroll, 50, was arrested January 18th on charges of conspiracy to injure an officer, destruction of government property, obstruction of an official proceeding, trespassing, and disorderly conduct. His mother told CNN, he had a litany of motherfucking charges, bro. Said his mother told CNN that her son told her that they were going to overtake the government if they tried to take Trump's presidency from him. Like it belonged to him, bro. Like it was his. However, Kroll apparently wasn't registered to vote in 2020. An election official in Ohio told the outlet that Kroll registered to vote in 2013, but he never voted or responded to any of our confirmation notices to keep him registered. Kroll was removed from the voter rolls in 2020, according to an official. Some others who participated in the insurrection were registered to vote last year but did not, including University of Kentucky senior Grayson Courtright, who posted a photo of herself on Instagram from outside the Capitol doors, captioned, "I can't wait to tell my grandkids I was here." Jessica Stern, a Boston University professor who has spent around 30 years researching extremists, told CNN the accused rioters might have believed that there was no point in voting since the system was rigged. And that's what I was getting ready to get to. Donald Trump supporters had been listening to him for so long while he was telling them that this shit was rigged, that they didn't even bother to vote. And then when he lost the fucking election, like he pretty much, it was like a self-sabotage. He told people that the shit was rigged. If I lose, it's because it's rigged. They're like, well, if the system's rigged, why am I even participating in it? And then when he lost, they lost it and went to the fucking Capitol, determined to overturn an election that he lost because he told motherfuckers the shit was rigged from the get-go. Ah, man. Yo, man.
Can't make it up.
You can't make this shit up, bro. And here's the other thing that I find very interesting. Before we get on up out of here, because we're getting ready to get up out of here in a second. But one of the things I find very interesting is that, like, a lot of the, like, conservative political commentators, they like to talk about the political elite, the liberal elite, right, and all these other things. They talk about the coastal elites. They go to Harvard. They go to Princeton. They go to Stanford. They go to, you know, all Yale. They go to all these schools. And what they don't tell a lot of the people is that they also went to these fucking schools, right? I also went to Princeton. I also went to Yale. I too am an alumni, right? And yet it's as if they consider their constituents stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And by and large, what we're finding out is that a lot of them kind of are. And I say that on a political sense in that, like, they're kind of like politically illiterate because they've convinced a lot of these people to vote against the interest more often than not. And so, like, for right now, for Donald Trump to have people who stormed the fucking Capitol because they thought that the election was stolen in an election they didn't even bother to fucking vote in. Come on, man. You can't be more proud to be an American than that. You can't be, man.
That's as American as it get, brother.
That should be a Chicago story at some point, man. I'm sure there's one for like a mayoral race in Chicago.
They're used to, for real, still elections. Chicago so off the chain. You're from Chicago. I'm sure you may have had occasion to go down to the city hall.
Yeah.
Here in Chicago, our city hall is a split building with the county building. But make no doubt about it, it's the same building. It's like you build your house up right, you take a piece of duct tape, run it down the middle of your house,
there you go,
and just call one half the county building, call the other half city hall, right?
Yep.
But literally, they built your house at the same time.
Same
and they
thing
actually,
here in Detroit.
Same everything, right?
Yep.
Tell me why in Chicago, the Chicago city hall costs twice as much to build as the county side? Because everything on the city side was double billed. Like, how? How does that happen? There ain't more windows on the county side. It's the same exact building. Yeah, symmetry, man. The same. But Chicago being Chicago figured out a way to scam its side of the shit.
There you go, man. It is what it is. And, you know, I'm sure, man, you're gonna give us some more tidbits, man, on the TikTok, bro, for real. But before we get out of here, of course, we do have a champ.
The champ is here! The champ is here! The champ is here! The champ is here!
All right. The champ is actually literally here, man. My boy Sherman is the champ of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast, man.
My word.
Guys, he's the champ of the week, man. Like, real talk, man. Listen, I love you, brother. And
word.
To see what you've, like, done, not only just, like, with this TikTok shit, man, but just, like, in life, man, considering where we came from. Considering what we, like, what we was doing when we was teenagers and shit, like some of the wild shit we was getting into, man, to see what, like, what you built of your life now, man. I got to give you flowers while I can. Give it to you in the way and not in which I know how, man. I love you, brother. I appreciate you for coming on here to Spirit Report Podcast, man.
Love you too, bro.
And real talk, man, I want you to know, man, like, I'm proud of you, man. I'm damn proud of you, bro. And
I
love to see what you got going on, man. Real talk. So
thank you.
That's what's up, man. Real talk, man. Shout out to
Larry. Hey, Larry, appreciate you.
Hey, listen, sister, we gonna meet, man. We gonna go like to New Orleans or something. We gonna meet me and Mr. Span, me and the Spans and the Thomases. We gonna get together, man. We gonna have us a time, man. Real talk, 'cause it is well overdue. for us to do that, man. Real talk. But I appreciate you, brother, man. And keep doing your thing, brother.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the support. I appreciate that.
Hey, man, no question, man. If you need anything, man, you know it's a phone call away, man. Real talk, I appreciate you coming on. But, yo, man, before we get out of here, I do need to remind you guys here at the Spirit Report Podcast, how to get in touch with us over here. Let your voice be heard here at the show. So go ahead and hit us up at our hotline at area code 313-288-0485. It's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, we'll play those voicemails here on the show and respond to you guys here on the show as well, man. Email us here, feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave us those emails and we'll reply to those emails here live on the show as well. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead, follow me there. Chop it up with your man Span throughout the week. Also, hit up the website at www.thespanreport.com. Go there, watch replays of the show, vote in the polls when we put those polls up. Go to our store, man. We got some merch. I'm wearing a fucking Span Report podcast shirt here right now, man. Get yourself some merch, man. Real talk. And support us in that way, man. Real talk. And also, Sherman, man, tell them how they can get in touch with you, brother.
Man, I would love it if you follow me on TikTok. You can learn about Chicago, Black Chicago, Chicago in general. The name is Six Figga, FIGGA _ Dilla. Same thing on Instagram, Six FIGGA _ Dilla. I would love a follow.
And the link will be in the show notes so y'all can go ahead. Like, I'll make it very easy for y'all to go ahead and do that, man. If you're watching the show, man, if you're listening to the show, man, hit that link and go ahead and follow my man over on TikTok. Get that Chicago history, man, for real. And, yo, man, it's time for us to get on up out of here. I will talk to you guys again soon. But until next time, fam, peace.